we can move the 20 license adjustments for select East River deer season units. Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, this particular item here would be number, or be page 76 of your packet. And this is an administrative action, should you decide to move forward. Mr. Jim Capriva spoke earlier today on the open forum about his interest in mule deer and having some additional limitations on the harvest of mule deer to retain those numbers. Certainly, there's been some other mule deer discussion talked about today on the call as well. But Mr. Capriva had approached, he initially submitted a petition that wanted to change licenses in eastern South Dakota. When I spoke with him on the phone a while back, actually talked to the fact that it wasn't necessary to do a petition from the standpoint of changing the administrative rule for what he was asking for. I know he has also had conversations with Commissioner Lochten. I believe Commissioner Olson has also spoken to Mr. Capriva about this very topic. But bottom line is he was looking for some ways to limit or reduce that potential harvest of mule deer in eastern South Dakota. And when I had further discussions with Commissioner Lochten after his discussions with Mr. Capriva, Commissioner Lochten asked us as a department to go back and pull together what we think would be a reasonable approach to address this issue. There were multiple things that we looked at some different paths we could have taken. But what you have in front of you is ultimately what we came up with as a recommendation to address his concern over reducing that harvest of mule deer does in particular. What we have on this action sheet, administrative action, is a recommendation for this upcoming hunting season for the East River deer season and refuge deer season to adjust all of the antlerless tags that exist out there right now, from any antlerless deer tags to whitetail antlerless tags. This would follow suit of what we have done for the muzzleloader deer season and the archery deer season from the perspective of the antlerless tags. Those are all whitetail only antlerless tags, and so this would follow suit with that. We believe that if an action is going to be taken for this coming year, this would be the most appropriate means right now. It's a population management approach, just like the others, and it would focus on the antlerless side of things. I will also share with you, commissioners, that my conversations with Commissioner Lochten, Commissioner Sharp, Commissioner Beast brought it up again today, and Commissioner Springs, there's certainly the desire to have more discussions about mule deer harvest approach. And our staff is starting to put that information together right now, and we will start bringing those pieces of information to you to start those discussions with ultimately bringing forward some additional recommendations when we do all of the deer hunting season recommendations next spring for the next 2 years. So this right here in front of you would address East River deer and refuge for this coming year. One quick thing I will also share with you, this is an administrative action. The license types are not found in terms of the allocation and administrative rule. Those are taken care of by administrative action and recorded in your commission meeting minutes. So we don't have to do the formal public notice. But if you want this to move forward and want to have it in place for this coming fall, it would require action today, because we are going to start printing applications and getting that out online for applications here over the next several weeks for the drawing to occur in early June. So we wouldn't have the time to go out for a 30-day public comment period, but this is something that you could still do if you believe that this is a necessary step to take. With that, Mr. Chairman, I am going to turn it over to Commissioner Lochten if there's anything he wanted to say about this particular item, as this originated with conversations between Commissioner Lochten and Mr. Capriva.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Lochten, a couple points I'd like to make is it isn't only Mr. Capriva. There are other people down there that have have heard about it and maybe made mention of it, that they sure enjoy having some mule deer there. And it is only a one year bridge to till we get to our other deer plan. And I appreciate Tom being adaptable to bring forward an option for us. I think it's worth looking at, and I think it's probably a statewide thing we're going to be looking at in the future. So I like the idea.
Is that a motion to approve?
Yes, I would make that a motion.
Second, Olson.
Any discussion? Not. Rachel, would you read the roll again, please?
Beast?
Aye.
Boyd?
Aye.
Locken?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
All in favor, motion carries.
Thank you. So before we go to the last three items on the agenda, we should probably take care of this resolution. Everyone will have it in their email, but John, would it work for you to just read the pertinent parts of this, and then we can get a motion to approve resolution 20-10?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Just 1 second while I pull it up.
This is the resolution denying the petition that we previously looked at earlier.
So, Mr. Chair, the relevant parts would be, whereas in 2019, the commission took action in public testimony and ultimately changed administrative rule to allow live traps on public lands through September 1st, and whereas the department continues to support and advocate for live traps to be allowed on public lands throughout the summer, regardless if there is a bounty program or not, and whereas the petition suggested change would restrict or take away opportunity for trappers to utilize public lands during the summer, which is contrary to the department's R3 efforts. Now, therefore, be resolved that the commission does hereby deny the petition for the reasons here above stated in the resolution.
Okay, thank you. So we'll need a motion to approve resolution 20-10.
So move, Commissioner Beast.
Olson seconds.
Any discussion? If not, Rachel, would you read the roll again, please?
Beast?
Aye.
Boyd?
Aye.
Lockett?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sharp?
Aye.
Spring?
Aye.
Whitmire?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Carried.
All right, so we're down to number 21, non-resident waterfowl structure briefings with Tom.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I'm going to actually make this very short. At the last commission meeting, Commissioner Sharp had asked for some additional background information or a slight briefing on the action sheet that we had brought forward about some potential non-resident waterfowl structure changes moving forward, again, which the item that we as a department recommended you agreed to table for now, just based on our challenges of having those robust conversations. But we did go back and put together some brief bullet points. We sent that out to all the commissioners last week for you to have a chance to look at. We have no further action based on that right now, but just wanted to bring that up, that we did share that with all of you. If there are some specific questions or point to that that you would like to have some further discussion or potential data on, things like that, we'd be more than happy to pull that together. But I just had this on the agenda to make sure, again, that made sure that you had that information. Take a look at it if you have not had an opportunity to do so, and then we will continue to have those discussions when we believe that we can have some more of those robust opportunities to bring folks together, have some candid conversations, because we certainly have folks that are interested in this topic. So nothing further to report, Mr. Chairman, other than the fact that we shared this information with you at this point in time.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions?
Commissioner Beast, just have a comment to make. I know we limit the non-residents for coming here doing waterfowl hunting, and then at the same time, I've heard in reports where we're not getting our harvest that we need from the amount of license or the residents that we have. We're also paying out thousands and thousands of dollars to goose damage. Why are we limiting the wild non-residents to come into the state? I'm sure that's one of the questions that will come out of the process, but I was just sitting there thinking about that. If we can't reach our harvest objectives with locals, we need to bring more non-residents to get to that harvest objective. Thank you.
Tom?
Yeah, through the chair, and thank you, Commissioner Beast, for that one. In respect to Canada Goose, we deal with goose depredation on an annual basis. We do have some non-resident restrictions when it comes to goose hunting in South Dakota, in particular in the southeast portion of the state. And it's been a challenging one every time we bring this topic forward from the standpoint of concern of taking away local hunting opportunities. And it's one of those issues that's been there for a long time and has a very strong background and history to it. In respect to the duck licenses, the waterfowl primary non-resident licenses, again, that's set in state statute, the number of non-resident licenses that are available for us to allocate and issue to those hunters. So we're going to continue those conversations, and we'll see where this all goes. But you're correct, Commissioner Beast, there's certainly interest, and we have some management challenges that we deal with, especially from a Canada Goose perspective.
So, Tom, I wonder, Commissioner Sharp.
I would echo what Commissioner Bees has said, and Commissioner Bees, I've asked that question many times because it seems that's one of the challenges of being a commissioner. It seems we manage some wildlife based on population, and we manage other wildlife based on public opinion. Not really sure how that really works, because I agree with you. If what we need to have taken out of the field, it cannot be accomplished by our residents. We certainly need to look at either getting non-residents or not put out so much money in mitigation efforts. So look forward to a robust conversation on that. Thank you.
Yeah, there will be a robust conversation, and we've had that on and off any number of times, which just leads me to, if we haven't given everybody a copy of the history, the PowerPoint, that sets out the history of this issue, that might be a good thing to send around to everybody, too.
Mr. Chairman, this is Tom Kirschman again. I will send out, even that we have like a historical document that even talks about the non-resident license history through the legislature as well, just for all the commissioners. That might be another good background piece. So I'll make sure to get that out to all the commissioners, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that, I think that will be good. It goes back into the, whatever it is, 50s or 60s and legislature and commission. So it'd be good for everybody to have that. So that takes us to 22, Hunt Safe Update.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Mr. Chair, and Secretary Hepler. This is Tania Besky, the Division Staff Specialist over Education and the Archery Coordinator. I'm going to give you just a real quick update about Hunt Safe. And we'll be looking at page 79 in your books. The first portion of the update that I'd like to give is our online Hunt Safe class. As was mentioned earlier, there are quite a few creative ways that we've had to manage the way that we do programming and education outreach during the COVID-19 situation. And one of those things has been to cancel all of our in-person Hunt Safe classes. But that Hunt Safe certification that we offer is one of our essential services as a department. And so in order to allow students ages 12 to 15 to still be able to get their Hunt Safe certification, we've waived the field day requirement for the students that originally had to take that to get certified along with their online class. One of the additional adaptations that we've made during this time, we currently offer, or as a department, we offer this free in-person class. And with that being put on hold for the time being, we've worked with our vendor to make the online opportunity free for students. Typically, the online opportunity, the online class, is $17.99, and that's a fee that is charged by our vendor. During this time, while there are no free in-person classes, our vendor has offered a limited number of free class slots to us, and any class slots that are above and beyond that number they've given to us, we as a department will cover until further notice. So when we start offering those in-person classes again, we'll be making a decision to adapt to changes at that time. So those are some of the things that we've done to meet the need of HuntSafe certification during this time with our online HuntSafe class. And I'm going to give a quick update as well about our HuntSafe in the Schools program, and then I'll take any questions at the end on both of those things. So as Mr. Bowden pointed out earlier in some of his comments, our HuntSafe instructor base is declining, and it's a limited population of folks. And as a department, we've tried to tackle HuntSafe instructor recruitment in different ways over the years. And one of the most exciting and successful ways that we have been able to recruit new instructors is through HuntSafe in the Schools. So the program itself is a partnership with Department of Education and the public school system to offer HuntSafe and Hunter Education Certification as part of the school day curriculum. And this addresses a couple of issues. As I mentioned, HuntSafe instructor recruitment can be the teachers in the school. But also it addresses the barrier to participation that students run into with having other after-school obligations or having to travel a distance to get to classes that are offered in the evenings and on weekends. So in order to help kind of get over those boundaries, offering this curriculum during the school day has helped tremendously. And so we started a pilot program to see how this runs back in the 2018-2019 school year. We had about 7 schools that participated that first year, and physical education and agriculture teachers took the class and ran with it. And we had a staff member at that time working directly with schools, as well as many conservation officers providing support, and the teachers took the curriculum and really demonstrated what we can do with the program. After that time, we saw success in those 7 schools, and as a department, decided to continue to grow the program as an effective and efficient way to deliver Hunter Education Certification curriculum to the broadest number of students. And so further recruitment efforts that we engaged in included sending staff from Game Fish and Parks to attend the Associated School Boards of South Dakota Conference, where we visited with superintendents and school administrators from across the state, and we advertised the program. And that drummed up quite a bit of interest in the program, and we were contacted by many school boards and many administrators and many teachers who were interested in the program to get certified shortly after that. We also attended the 2019 SHAPE SD Conference, which is for all physical education teachers. We provided National Archery in the Schools program, or NASP, instructor training for those teachers, and then all of the teachers that went through that program were invited to participate in HuntSafe school instructor trainings. The Department of Education requested that we come out and train additional teachers in both HuntSafe and NASP at instructor trainings and teacher in-services for FFA and agriculture teachers. And we've also had conservation officers reach out directly to their local school board contacts. As a result of all those efforts in the school year of 2019-2020, we currently have 40 teachers that are fully certified in teaching HuntSafe in their schools, and we have 10 trap and scholastic sporting clay coaches associated with schools who are also certified. We have an additional 10 teachers and 5 trap coaches that are interested in getting certified this summer if we are able to hold our training. To date, we have 281 students who've been certified in HuntSafe in the schools just between school year 2018-2019 and 2019-2020. And we're looking ahead at how we can continue to grow this program. Governor Noem brought the topic up in her state of the state address, and we are doing everything that we can to continue to grow this program in the face of some of the challenges we've had this year. So as of right now, we are currently scheduled to have a summer teacher academy where teachers will have the opportunity to participate in a free training with the department where they can come and get Hunt Safe in the School certified. They can be certified as National Archery in the Schools program instructors, Fish SD instructors, or Project Wild instructors. And at this time, our main department contacts for this are Patrick Klotzbach and our contractor, Chad Tissing. And we're continuing to look ahead at what we can do with this program to reach additional target populations. You know, this isn't just for the students that want to hunt. It's also for students that may come from families that don't hunt and are looking for exposure. This is also a beneficial program for students who may come across firearms in their homes or homes of their friends and need to know how to safely manage those situations. So with that, I'd like to take any questions that you all may have about our adaptations to the online Hunt Safe class and our Hunt Safe in the Schools program.
Thank you. Any questions? Comments?
Just one comment I'd make, Commissioner Beese, is that, you know, the gentleman before asked if somebody would step up and start thinking out of the box to recruit people. I think that's just what this is accomplishing, and sounds like a good job to me.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you. We'll go on to 20. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if they started many of these things in West River and the rural areas to try to get, because I know of some of the younger kids and stuff to get hunter safety and all that have to travel a long ways. I was just wondering if they've improved any of that in West River.
Most of our recruitment for this program started in Rapid City and spread outward from there. So we have quite a few schools that are West River that have started to participate, as well as kind of in Rapid City and around that area and Central South Dakota as well. We don't have as much engagement in our larger urban populations, and honestly, the rural schools are the ones that are most interested and excited to participate at this time.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, Mr. Sharp.
Commissioner Springs, yeah, in Watertown, I offered to sponsor a team. I found a coach, offered to pay for the cost for the first year, and I couldn't get it by the officials to get it presented to the school board. So, you know, I know there's towns like Aberdeen and Pierre that have had remarkable success with the shooting sports, which is, I think, the largest sport in the state of Minnesota. But getting some traction here, I've really struggled with it, and yet I think it's a great idea. And Tanai and I have had those conversations, and I know she is trying to work on, you know, expanding that around the state and certainly in some of the larger cities. But I agree with everything you're saying.
Thank you, Commissioner Sharp.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, thank you. Let's go to 23, license sales update.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, and Secretary Hepler. This is Heather Villa, the Wildlife Administration Chief. If you go to page 81 in your commission book, you'll see the license sales update. For the most part, we are up on all of our numbers. You can see that folks are certainly buying their licenses a little earlier in the year. I'll highlight just a few of those for you. If you look at our resident combo licenses, we're up about 25%. Our resident annual fishing licenses are up 89% from last year. But again, last year we had terrible weather for fishing, so I don't know that that's entirely a shock. But overall for our resident licenses, we're up about $928,000 in overall revenue. On the non-resident side, again, we're showing positive numbers compared to last year, which we had an incredibly poor year last year. But for our annual fishing, we're up 32%, which is a great number. Overall, for our license sales, currently we are up $1.2 million. I'd take any questions you all may have.
Questions? Comments? Okay. Anything else anybody has to talk about or wants to raise or make sure we get on the next agenda?
Whoever timed out the agenda with today's meeting, well done. Perfectly.
Yes.
All right. Well, we'll be in recess. We'll adjourn until our next meeting.